I'm doing great, Larry. So happy to be here today. And different from you, I'm not boiling here. It's not that hot. We're in the mountains.
It has been just incredibly warm. It's been over 100 degrees pretty much every day since Christmas, it seems. Just torture us a little bit. What's the weather like right there where you're at?
Max is 76, 78, and it just for like 3, 4 hours, and then it cools down again.
We're no longer friends. We're no longer
Sorry.
friends. Just tell, yes, oh, all right. Okay, well, you get a pass because you're not here, but you're a world traveler. You've been all around, and the places that you go, is storytelling important now as it was in the past?
I believe so. I mean, some of the ways we approach storytelling has changed, but people are still eager and hungry for stories.
People are eager and hungry for stories. I like that. Now, your first story tonight is called The Fall of the Flies.
Yes.
And you said this is a story about you finding your calling in the weirdest situation while living in Texas. Did I get that right?
Yes, yeah, that's
All
very true.
right, well, take it away. Tell us the fall of the flies.
I have been in the United States for about 11 years, and during that time, I have lived in 3 states, one apartment, 2 Airbnbs, 3 dorms, 4 houses, and numerous hotels and campgrounds. And there is always a story to tell about each place you have lived, right? For instance, the apartment I lived while in Tennessee happened to be located on the same street where a serial killer was discovered hiding the bodies of his victims in his basement. True story. And more on that later. Aside from that, the first house that you own may hold the most vivid or fondest memories. Our first house in 1303 Crumpet, San Antonio, Texas, holds the memories of my transition into becoming a storyteller. While living in that house, I experienced what most people call the hero's journey, because I chose to go against everybody's best instincts, which entitled me to a life full of unbelievable adventures, trials of fire, deciphering old prophecies, traveling to magical lands, and discovering ancient tools that eventually helped me prove what I am truly made of. So, back when I lived in Texas, a land as big as the stories they spin, back when I was looking for what my dad used to call a serious job, but hoping that the storytelling career would take off, the following happened. One hot Texas summer morning, as hot as a stolen tamal and so dry that the birds were building their nests out of barbed wire, after my husband left for work, I went to the kitchen to serve myself a delicious Colombian cafecito. Then I went to the living room, placed a coffee mug on the table, turned the TV on, sat on the sofa, and caught the local news reporter talking about the unmerciful heat wave spreading all across Texas. The man said, "Oh, soon we will be dropping like flies." At that moment, I leaned forward to grab my cafecito and saw a fly on the rim of the coffee mug. The fly rubbed her upper front legs, scratched the back of her head, and then licked her upper front legs with delight. I'm telling you, Colombian coffee is the tastiest coffee in the world. Well, I did what most people do. Shoo, shoo! and continue with my daily routine, you know, looking for a serious job, walking my dog, eating, reading, cleaning a little, watching TV, waiting. As if the fly and I had a gentleman's agreement, we avoided each other for the rest of the day. That or she completely disagreed with my taste in loud, upbeat salsa music that I play when I'm cleaning the house. Also, although I opened the back door several times to let my dog go for pee-pees and poo-poos, the fly seemed completely uninterested in the outside world. Mostly, she hung out around the living room. By the next day, I had hoped the fly had realized I had relatively poor cooking skills. Like that one time when I added a whole cup of salt to the pasta pesto recipe. Yeah, I'm not good at following instructions. My dearest ate the meal out of love, but we spent most of the night highly dehydrated. A few days passed and the fly and I were getting acquainted. I even defended her from my husband when he said, "There is a fly in the house," as if implying, "You should do something about it." But I thought, well, what's the harm in having one fly in the house? She won't last long. She'll soon leave or she'll die. At the time, I didn't know that flies could live up to 28 days for or more. Monday. After my husband left for work, when I was having my morning cafecito watching the local news, the power went off. Poof. Just when the news reporter was saying, "Remember, time flies," I went outside. The entire neighborhood was without power. And it was while surrounded by an all-encompassing silence that I heard a distinctive humming sound. I thought, is it outside? I checked, nada. So I traced it and located it coming from the biggest window in the house, 80 by 70 inches. It had curtains and blinds that I kept closed at all times. So I opened the curtains and brought my ear closer to the blinds and confirmed that the humming sound was coming from the other side. I was perplexed. I had been rewatching the X-Files and many crazy theories were running through my head. I paired them up with a dream my mother had the other day about being abducted by aliens. And as many witnesses have reported, there is always a humming sound preceding the abduction. And since everything is possible in Texas, I gathered my courage, twisted the wand, and as the blinds opened, they revealed the most astonishing yet frightening scene. There were hundreds of flies living a busy life between the blinds and the window glass. I mean, I'm talking about baby flies, adolescent flies, millennium flies, middle-aged flies going through a crisis. I even saw grandma and grandpa flies. I mean, the whole society was right there. Now, if you're not impressed, let me tell you what I found to be the most remarkable. They had created a perfect replica of an old Western town. Oh, yeah. I saw a general store, a saloon, a schoolhouse, a bank, the sheriff's office, a gunsmith's building, blacksmith staples, a hotel, a land office, dry goods, a clothing store, a telegraph office, a stagecoach depot, and even apartments for the cowboy flies and their families. I could tell the saloon was open because I saw two dizzy flies come out holding onto each other, laughing, and then falling on the floor in a stupor. Then I saw the sheriff, the biggest of all the flies, with a well-trimmed mustache. He was outside watching an unfolding duel between two male flies that had gotten into a buzzing argument over a very coquettish lady fly who was very unsure who to give her love to. The quarrel captured the attention of all the other flies that came out to watch and place a bet or two. The suitors counted to 10, bzz, bzz, and walked away from each other. Then they turned around, drew their pistols out, and fired away. Beep! After the suitors had canceled each other, the coquettish lady fly, bored with the outcome, went back to her life, bzz, as all the other flies did. As if I was the fly on the wall, I continued watching this freaky marvel of nature unfolding before my eyes. And that is when I heard caskets, as if someone was riding horses. So I directed my attention about 5 inches southwest of the town, likely 50 miles in human distance. And that is when I saw 6 banded flies riding roaches. And they were being chased and shot, pew pew, by another group of flies riding small lizards. There were several casualties, but I could not tell who the good guys were. That's the Wild West for you, right? Finally, I saw what seemed to be a very serious old male fly going up and down Main Street, shouting and preaching that the first mother fly had brought them to the promised land. Thus, it was their destiny. No. It was their duty to grow, populate, and expand beyond the deserted borders of that window. And I thought, this is just madness. In shock and disbelief, I closed the blinds, thinking my husband was going to be very upset, like, I told you so, type of upset. Then a very paranoid thought began taking shape in my head. What if those flies listened to that prophet and decided to take over mi casa, my house? By the time my husband came back home, my dog and I were going to be food for maggots. Oh no, not on my watch. Houston, we got a problem. I was about to get busy. Busy as a stump-tailed bull in fly season. Perhaps it was that in Texas, people are bold or medio locos, which could be contagious. So I went to my closet and put on the pink Texan boots a dear friend gave me when I left Tennessee for the Lone Star State. I adjusted my bandana, buckled up my belt, tied up 2 grocery bags around it as if they were gun holsters, and at last, I put on the cowboy hat I bought at a potty store last Halloween, because I still dress up. Yet I needed my weapon of choice, so I went into the kitchen and pulled out the top right drawer and grabbed the blue trapito, the darkest, most ragged of all the kitchen towels. It was the one that my mother had sent me from Colombia. It had been in the family for generations. Its history spans over 500 years. More on that in a different story. But legend tells that my blue trapito, my blue kitchen towel, was used to wipe the tears of La Llorona, the weeping woman. That lady that goes around crying and frightening people from Mexico all the way down to La Patagonia, the south of South America. Her tears are said to be so powerful that they can resuscitate los muertos, raise the dead. My blue trapito, my blue kitchen towel, has endured hot and cold turmoil, unrest, revolutions, the fall of dynasties, hurricanes, floods, and all the bloody Colombian wars. So there was no doubt that my blue trapito could take down some unwelcome buzzing insects nesting in mi casa, my house. So, armed with my weapon of choice, I went back to the living room, ready to unleash the most severe punishment on those forajidas, outlaws. Larry, it is hard to describe the thirst for cold fly blood that was pumping a vengeful desire in me. I had had enough. I had been kind to the lone lady, but she had taken it too far. I was not going to have in my hands another Alamo. No, senor, we were paying mortgage. There was only one solution: get rid of them all. Now I will pause here because some may be wondering why I didn't use a fly swatter or an insect spray, which are more efficient and cover more territory. Well, had I used one of those, I wouldn't be telling this story. Also, I didn't have any of those boring tools in mi casa, my house. Moving on, it was 11 o'clock in the morning. The job was going to take me all day. So, manos a la obra, let's get to it, I said. Then I walked towards the window, swinging my blue trapito, my blue kitchen towel in the air, and it looked as if I was going to lasso a steer. Then I twisted the wand and pulled the cord all the way down, and the blinds went all the way up. And right there, I began swinging my blue trapito from side to side, from left to right, like a whip. Oh, yeah, you betcha. I took them by surprise. Well, at first, because soon I realized that those cowboy flies were not going down that easily. To my amazement, they began pulling out their guns, pistols, and rifles, and started shooting at me. Pew, pew, pew. Ouch, I complained. Come on, guys, that hurts. It stung a little, like a pinch. Ouch. Well, after I recovered from being attacked in my own house, I realized that their bullets were made of roach poop, which was gross, but quite resourceful, if you ask me. Yet I wasn't harmed. Despite the tiny holes their bullets put in my cowgirl shirt, I continued swinging my trapito from side to side, from left to right for hours, and one by one, they surrendered and fell numb on the ground. Bzzz. I picked them up as they fell and backed them up. By the time my dearest returned from work around dusk, I had two bags full of stunned flies, and I was proud of a good day's work. So I threw my hat over the windmill. I said nothing to my partner. I tied the bags and left them in the garage, awaiting their sentence to be decided, but done. Ooh. The next morning, I took the bags to the backyard. I held them up so they could hear me loud and clear when I said, "You have greatly annoyed me, but you have done what nature tells you to do: grow and expand. Even we humans continue to do it at the expense of others. So, no, you don't deserve to die by my hand, but I don't want to see you in mi casa again." So I put the bags down, untied them, and watched them fearfully fly away. But that's not the end of the story. Next summer, a fly accidentally wandered off into mi casa. And when we happened to coincide in the same space, I addressed her and said, "Have you heard the story of the fall of the flies? Do you know who I am?" She looked at me with her compound eyes. Then she broke into a sweat. A tear rolled down one of her eyes, and with a shaky voice, she asked, "Bzzz, are you the one with a weeping blue trapito that caused the fall of the first fly town? Bzzz." The one and only. "Esa soy yo," I said. "Bzz, oh, please, have mercy," the fly implored. Fine. But at your earliest convenience, please fly to the back door. I will open it. And you better get out. Because as they say around these parts, don't mess with mi casa, my house. She did as I said. Oh, I know the story of my legendary deed has spread far and wide across the insect kingdom. Some have even exaggerated the tale. You know how it is when you mix time, fear, imagination, and a storyteller or two, right? Some have said that it was my dog, the one who single-handedly accomplished the whole feat. Others have said that I'm 12 feet tall and have 3 heads and 8 arms, or how else was I going to bring them down to their knees? They say that I'm as mean as a mama wasp, that my blue trapito is faster than a double-struck lightning, and that my swing is so strong that I make Samson look sensitive. Well, I don't care how they spin the yarn, because I learned a thing or two, Larry. I learned that storytelling is my serious job, and that stories are so powerful that they can ignite, grow, expand, and even cause the fall of civilizations, nesting in a window or in a lonely planet. So, my friends, if this story ain't a fact, God is a possum. And that's my story.
Lord help us. Now, folks, I don't know if you have ever heard a story like that before. I kept identifying favorite parts all the way through. And the last one I settled on is when she looked at me with her compound eyes. You know, if I'd have had a glass of sweet tea, it would have been sprayed all over my desk. That is not. Now, let me ask you this. How long did it take you to construct that piece of madness?
It took me several months, actually. But it is a true story. I mean,
I
it did
believe it
happen to me.
100%. I believe it. And having met your husband, all those parts you filled in with his voice, I was seeing him. I was seeing him right before my eyes. That's amazing. Now, who do you share that story for? When's the most often time you use a big story like that?
Well, I actually told it at the Texas Storytelling Festival last year. Then I brought it to the National Storytelling Center. And then I took it to, I think it was Missouri. So she's been traveling with me for a little while, and I just
enough
of it.
Now, folks, that voice you've been hearing, that's Carolina Quiroga Stoltz. She's a fantastic Colombian storyteller. We have her on So What's Your Story tonight. I'm Larry Thompson, and she's gracious enough to be our guest. And we're right here on HD1 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, and 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And you can even listen live right there on your phone or your tablet. And don't forget, we've got KPFT's free internet on HD2 and meet all your news, arts, and entertainment needs. And we're pleased as punch to be here each week bringing you So What's Your Story. It's Houston's community show on Houston's community station, and our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, and I'm pretty sure you would put Carolina in that pocket right there. You tune into Houston's community station for the finest programming around, and we bring it to you every Wednesday on So What's Your Story. It's people like you that make a community station like this possible. Now, Carolina, who was the storyteller in your home when you were growing up?
Well, I would have to give that responsibility to my mother. She was a
teacher.
Yes, and she loved telling stuff that happened at her work, but she was more like a tall teller. So she would exaggerate everything. And she would tell
Exaggeration.
the story 10 times, and each time it was a
Every
different
time was a
version.
little bit different.
Yes.
That's what's great. You hear it and you're like, oh no, I've heard this. Wait a minute, I haven't heard that part. But wait, there
Yes.
was, oh, that. So she was the one. Now, did you appreciate that storytelling at the time, or maybe you appreciate more now that you're doing more storytelling?
I actually always liked it very much, and I wouldn't get tired of her telling the stories. And for the past 10 years, every time I go back to Colombia, I always try to record more and more of her stories and even the different versions she has. And I've been working on precisely compiling some of that stuff, hopefully in a book one day.
And I bet she says, now, who in the world would want to hear this? Who would care about this story?
Yes, but there's always audiences for our stories, so we should never really let something that fear stop us from sharing, because we all have wonderful stories to share.
What's the furthest place away from Texas that you've been telling stories? Where's the furthest place?
I would say Costa Rica.
There you go. And those, when you go to a place like that, you bring stories with you, but you also pick up new stories while you're there.
Oh yes, there's always someone that tells, "Hey, that story reminded me," or "We actually have something similar here in our country or in our state." So I would love to tell you the story, and I'm like, "Yes, please tell me, tell me."
And that idea that there can be storytellers all around us, that brings us to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, which is a great place to learn about the art of telling stories. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. The next swap is in just a couple of weeks. You can check out their website, houstonstorytellers.org. That's ORG. And they'll have the link, they'll have all the information in their calendar there. And by the way, on that website, they have a program section and they have all of the episodes of So What's Your Story stored out there forever and ever. You can hear Hank and you can hear Eric and you can hear Mary, all of us out there with our past shows. And of course, our friends at Moth at Warehouse Live are back in full swing, usually around the second Tuesday of the month. And you enjoy hearing astonishing stories just like that one. Maybe not just like that one, but astonishing stories nonetheless. You get to know Houston's storytelling community and another fabulous way to crank up your storytelling skills. And Carolina mentioned this, the National Storytelling Network. And also the Tejas Storytelling Association up in Denton. Now, Carolina, we can't let you get out of here without hearing another story from you. Where does this next story come from, and what is it called?
It's from Tennessee, where I lived for 2 years and then again another year last year. And it's called A Halloween Night on West Locust Street. So here's the thing, Larry. This is a true story. During the first 6 months I had arrived in the US to do a master's in storytelling, I lived in three different dorms at three different buildings on campus. And I was about to move into a small flat on the first floor of a two-story house on West Locust Street. Now, living in a dorm when you're in your early 30s wasn't as horrific as advertised. I had been told, "Carolina, you're too old to do that." Certainly, it wasn't paradise, especially when all the amenities were cramped in a small square space of about 9 by 9 feet. And what you need to know about me is that I lived with my parents until my late 20s. Don't judge me. It is quite normal among Latino families and millennials, especially when you are an only child. So the dorms and the flat were the transitioning steps into an independent life. In Colombia, I attended college in the same city where my parents lived, and when my parents finally let me fly solo and come to the US, they endlessly repeated, "El mundo está lleno de peligros. The world is a dangerous place." I'm a big girl, papi. I know, mi niña, but you'll be wise to watch your six. Que sí, papi, it's all good. Well, when the day came to move into the flat, I was exhilarated. I was lucky enough for a friend who was moving away to donate his furniture. I now had so much space to fill up that the bed, the couch, nightstand, bookcase, TV, TV stand, and kitchen pots became quite handy. Also, every area in the flat was divided from the other, so the kitchen was not in the bedroom anymore, but separate from it by a decent sized living room. This ganga or sweet bargain came for the fair price of $400 a month. What a lucky girl I was. Still, the laundromat was a couple of blocks away, like when I lived in the dorms, but that was not a problem either because I was sold a very old Jeep for less than 50 bucks. The old Pichirilo, as I called it, never gave me trouble. Yet the soft plastic top was a bit torn, which accounted for a freezing ride during fall and winter seasons. And Pichirilo would only reach 40 miles per hour on the highway, which I learned is the minimum speed any car is allowed to drive on it. And I was fine with that. Those who have ridden with me say that I either drive like a little old lady afraid of everything, or I drive like a maniac on steroids. Either way, it is an unforgettable experience. Other than that, I had hit the jackpot. Among the many things I experienced for the first time in that place were learning to cook, hosting my first friends gathering, discovering what a dishwasher was, but never used it because I had no idea how to, and learning that I was living on the same street as a serial killer. Really. But not really. But yeah, really. So I had been living for almost a year in that flat when a friend helping me with a video project at school asked me where I lived. I said, "I live on West Locust Street." He said, "You mean the road near the laundromat where shady deals happen? Below Pine Street?" Truth to be told, I hated going to the laundry place. You would never see any friendly faces there. But I always kept to myself. A friend that came to visit once, and together we went to a bar 3 blocks from my flat and a block away from the laundromat, asked me, "Donde vives, Carolina? What kind of neighborhood is this?" She was a foreigner like me, so that should have been a warning. But back to the conversation with my doomster friend, I cautiously said, "Not sure what you mean by that, but I live about 5 blocks from campus, crossing University Parkway." He said, "Well, there is only one West Locust Street in town. Did you know that on that street they caught a serial killer about a year ago? Oh, yeah. It was all over the news. Were you living there already?" I froze. Quickly calculating the weeks, months, and minutes I had lived in that place and the times I had suspected of those around me. All the time. Mommy had always warned me to watch my surroundings. When you come from a country like mine with a long history of violence, you grow eyes in the back of your head. So, like I said, I had always kept to myself and hadn't even met the neighbors upstairs. I was always in and out. My doomsayer friend continued, "Well, the guy, you know, the serial killer, was in his mid-30s and lived with his aging mother who could barely walk. Typical. And when the police searched his house, they found chopped body parts in the freezer he kept in the basement." Oh boy. My mind quickly reviewed how many mid-30 white males I had encountered on that street while living there. As you know, the U.S. leads the world in documented serial killers, more than 3,600, and 80% had been white males. So, but still, I couldn't remember a single one. Not that they didn't exist, but like I said, I was always in and out. So yeah, I had a good reason to be worried about. This horrific news came at a time when my routine was about to change. Soon I would spend more time at home working on my capstone project because I was only 4 months away from finishing my master's. So I wondered, if there had been one, could there be two serial killers on West Locke Street? Did he have a brother or an accomplice? Not likely. Serial killers enjoy working solo, but there are copycats. Also, had I been under his radar? I'm pretty charming. I can tell you how much that old news messed up with my head. Although technically I had nothing to be worried about, the guy was in jail, or was he not? Apparently, the guy had also some sort of mental disorder. And sometimes when they have those afflictions, they off themselves when they cannot, you know, satisfy their needs. So what if his still bloodthirsty and tormented soul was not resting in peace? I believe in ghosts. There was no way for me to find out more. The internet and my friend didn't offer much consolation. So I took the necessary precautions that a foreign woman should take when she's away and alone. I binge Law and Order, the original, all 22 seasons. I also watched the TV show Grimm, a fantasy police drama where a homicide detective discovers he's the last in line of guardians that had sworn to keep the balance between humanity and mythological creatures. Oh yeah, during the day, I developed a taste for natural and supernatural detective work. But at night, I was just another woman frightened for her safety. Every night, I double-checked that all doors and windows were properly locked and barricaded them with chairs and other furniture. I even placed those sticky bugs traps around the doors to make the intruder's life unpleasant. I locked my bedroom door before going to bed every night and kept a sharp knife on the nightstand. Whoever dared to come for me would not take me down that easily. Yet, any bam, oh, or any noise would wake me. I was on high alert. I didn't tell my parents, but I told the guy I was dating at the time, and he said, "Oh, I bet there's nothing to be worried about. You'll be fine." A year later, I married him. I even left the kitchen and living room lights on at night to give the impression that I was awake and had company. A girl gotta do what she's gotta do. Now, spooky season arrived. Like other storytellers in the program, I prepared some eerie and suspenseful and goosebumps stories to impress young and adult audiences, which didn't benefit my increasing paranoia. Oh yeah, during the months leading to it, to Halloween, I devoured anthologies on mysteries and scary hauntings and even watched Freddy Krueger for the first time. Quite chilling. So, October 31st, Halloween. The day went uneventfully. I went to the office, did some work at the library, had lunch, saw the guy I was dating, and went home early because a thunderstorm had been forecasted. Back home, I had a meal, reviewed the project I was writing. I tried to go to bed early, although it was pouring rain outside, and the thunder cracks were ominously louder than usual. Pam, 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 pam. I called my boyfriend, who sweetly asked if I wanted company and assured me he would keep his phone on if I needed him to cross the seven oceans. I declined, saying, "I'm a big girl." "No, I'm not." But I was about to become one. After reading on the bed to ease my nerves, I played some relaxing music and finally turned the lights off past 11. I hadn't been asleep for over an hour when I was awakened by a loud bum thought, followed by a thunder crack, ba bum bum, and the house and the street's lights going psst, off, a blackout. I got up thinking that the light post had fallen on the street. I looked out, but it didn't. Yet the indifferent full moon, the persistent rain, and the merciless wind warned off the danger ahead. I opted for going to the bathroom that was on the other side of the flat by the kitchen. When I was done and on my way back to the bed, I stopped for a glass of water. And it was then that I heard, "Help." It was a faint, eerie, and phantasmagoric cry for aid. I thought I was hallucinating, but my rational mind spelled it out for me. HELP, help. Was someone in need for real? Was this a tormented soul or any other ghost from folklore setting up a trap on Halloween night? Were all those cruel and gory movies right about the sinister things that could happen on October 31st? Or was the common lore right about the dead walking freely among the living? I thought it couldn't be the headless horseman. He's such a prideful fellow that asking for help was beneath him. What about El Chupacabras? I discarded it because he mostly roars or growls, unless he learned to speak English, which he could. Or could it be the weeping woman? Maybe, but she tends to have either a sweet and velvety voice or a very mean scream. And this cry didn't sound like that. Then I remembered the scariest of them all. In my humble opinion, the Shadow Man. This being has been reported all across the world as being one that haunts your nights. At times, sits on your chest and tries to suffocate you. Other times, it stares at you from a corner, follows you around, and whispers in your ear. And I heard again, "Help." For a moment, I thought that being haunted by a ghost from an urban legend was better than the worst alternative, that the locust street serial killer was out and about looking for prey or wrapping up loose ends. You know, serial killers are impulsive and can't help themselves, and most of the time they return to the scene of the crime to relieve the experience. And my flat was not too far from it. Help! I ran to my room and I locked the door, tripping because we had no lights. I desperately looked for my phone and I dialed my shiny knight. Beep, beep, beep. Dee, 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 dee. He didn't answer. Help. I returned to the kitchen with my phone, pulled the curtains, and looked out by my Jeep. My Jeep was parked in front, blocking the view. Help. I texted my sleeping prince, but nothing. He was in a deep trance. I opened the kitchen drawer and pulled out another knife. In my rush, I had forgotten the other one on the nightstand. Outside, the wind was relentless, making the trees in the yard bend to their malicious will. I thought for sure one would crush the Jeep. Pam, pam! Another thunder crack. I crossed the kitchen, living room, and bedroom in less than a second and hid in the closet. I checked the phone. Nada. Then another thought. Bam! This time something hit an outside window. It could have been a branch flying aimlessly, or the shadow man, or the serial killer announcing his return. I was his last victim. Hell! I thought this was the stupidest way to die. So much hope bestowed on me. This would destroy my family and likely traumatize my Prince Charming for not answering the phone. But how could he know? But still. Help. Wait, what? Was that laughter? Oh no. The evil hunter was enjoying himself. Was he already in the house? It sounded like coming from the kitchen. I decided to put up a fight. At least the headlines and the forensic report will conclude that I didn't go down like one of those helpless damsels in distress. I never liked fairy tales. So I came out of the closet and slowly opened the door, making sure to minimize any creaking noises. In every scary movie, a creaking noise gives the future corpse away. I heard footsteps outside, pa, 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 running back and forth. Pa, 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 pa. There were two of them. This was an unfair fight. I stopped by the room door, but my heart was turning on me. She's there, she's there, she's there, she's there. I turned the doorknob and, like an experienced TV cop on a surveillance situation, I slowly slid my back around the frame door, holding the knife in one hand and the phone in the other with the flashlight on. All clear. Outside, the rain had halted and the wind had slowed down, helping me hear the most feared sounds. Steps running outside and that laughter. I swiftly crossed the living room, made it to the kitchen, peered through the curtains, and saw two shadows running back and forth past my Jeep. Suddenly, those two shadows were joined by others from the farthest right corner of the street. Since the power was still out, I couldn't make much of it. So I let my imagination and my rational mind fill the gaps. This was no shadow man or just one serial killer. There were men in shadows. I felt slightly less anxious, but still concerned for my safety, because this could be a gang of drunken men weirdly celebrating Halloween. Despite what folklore says, I believe the first witches were men. Determined to call 911 and unsure where the cry for help came from, I opened the kitchen door, stepped into the yard, walked a few paces, and faced the truth. The ghostly cry for help, which I had attributed to an apparition or a version of the serial killer on West Locust Street, was made by a man in a wheelchair trapped under one of the trees that had been hit by a bolt of lightning that had missed my Jeep. And the laughter was coming from a couple of good Samaritan drunks that sober up when they had to muscle up to pull out the real victim of this story. About 30 minutes after the incident, my Quixote calls me back with his shining armor and cape, saying, "My darling, should I come to rescue you?" I said, "Nah, it's all good. I figured it all out. I'm a big girl." It took me a while to go back to sleep, thinking how quickly I had gone down the rabbit hole. But can you blame me? Of all the days of the year, the storm, the blackout, and the eerie cry for help happened on Halloween night. And that's my story, Larry.
Man, that is something else. An And the amount of, now, folks, you're here, and this is Carolina Quiroga Stoltz, something that you've been listening to. The idea of crafting a story like that, the detail that gets included, what's the name of the Jeep? What did you call your Jeep?
Pichirilo.
Now what's that loosely translate to?
Like a old busted car.
Oh,
That's
well, there
kind
you go. So,
of
and the right down to the and folks are picturing that Jeep. There are plenty of them here in Texas, and they're picturing that Jeep, especially with the tears and the little plastic parts that let the heat come in or let the cold come in and the wind and the rain. Oh, I don't know what to think about that. That particular story, you lived in that location.
I did.
So a lot of this is absolutely true.
There's not a single element that I added. It is completely true.
My
It's,
goodness.
I normally told this story to friends just like as a joke on Halloween 31st, but then my husband finally said, "Why don't you just write it down?" Because everything is true. I mean, a friend told me about the serial killer. I was dating my husband, my future husband at the time, and I called him many times. He never answered.
Did he ever give you a good reason for not
He
answering
fell
your
asleep.
frantic call? He fell asleep.
He said he was going to keep studying, but no, he just fell asleep.
Well, he should have had some of that fine Colombian coffee to
I
stay awake
know.
with. My goodness. And we have to let people know the man in the wheelchair, he turned out to be okay.
Yeah, he was fine. In the end, the tree fell on him, but there was like a gap under, so he just couldn't pull himself out, but it was just blocking the wheelchair, but he was
Well,
fine. He was kind of stuck, but he was fine. Yes.
all things turn out good in the end of the
Yes.
story. That is
Yes.
definitely good. Oh my gosh. I thought it was going to be little children Halloween people running up and down the street, but no, it was two drunk guys trying to sober up and lift a big old tree branch off a wheelchair. Ah, man, that is quite a story. Now, if you how do you let people know that it's okay for them to tell their own stories like that? Some people think that they don't have anything to share or anything to tell.
Oh no, I always tell them that that's not true. I mean, every time we are with a friend, we always say, "Guess what?" And we start telling a story. We just never think that we can put it on stage. And yeah, it is true. Sometimes you have to add some details or tweak the story here and there to make it a little bit more interesting or pace it up or maybe slow it down. But in the end, the truth is that we are all storytellers and we have so many stories to tell. And the things that go through our minds, like in this case, I was just going paranoid because of, being up alone,
Definitely.
by my friend telling me that horrible thing about the serial killer. And so just kind of exploring those things that go through your mind really adds to a story. But the truth is that we all are storytellers and our stories are so valuable. And if we share them more, I'm sure humanity can progress faster, if we dare to share what we have.
Now, when, I guess I would say, when did you realize that you could actually do this on a stage? Did you have a moment and you said, I can do this in front of 600 people watching or here on a radio show?
Well, I would say that when I was in Colombia, my last job, I was producing cultural and artistic events. So I was in logistics and communications and having to promote so many artists and attend the shows that we were producing and all that is what made me want to be on stage. I just didn't
Seeing
know,
all
like,
that go on and the enjoyment that those folks had and the joy that they could bring to other people made you want to be a part of that world, I suppose, or a part of that that function. That's as good as it gets right there. My goodness. And you'd recommend it to anybody out there to get a chance to do it.
I mean, it could be a little scary at times, but once you get your foot in the door, once you try it
Yes.
one time, a second time, it just gets easier and we start getting more comfortable talking about ourselves or just weaving all these stories that are running through our heads. It's just giving yourself an opportunity, daring to do it. Because the truth is that I've seen people that they are not, as we said, professionals. They are great. They
They
are
are
good.
fantastic storytellers everywhere around. Now,
I
they may
always
not have that towel that has the tears from La Llorona, and 500, was it 500 years or five generations? I think
500
five
years.
generations. Oh, Lord, 500 years. Now, they may not have those kind of props at their disposal, but everybody has a story to tell. Well, Carolina, thank you so much for being here with us. I hope you had as much fun at
I
telling
did.
the stories as we did listening to them. We're gonna start to wind things up here as soon as I figure out all the logistics of what I've got to do. But we're wrapping the program up, and I want you to keep it right here on KPFT. There's a lot of fantastic programming coming up next. And don't forget, you're listening to member-supported programming on HD1, Houston's community station. You can find us at 90.1. You can find us on the computer. Just find us. And whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling in the park, be sure to join us every Wednesday night for So What's Your Story? Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you even throughout the rest of this year, past Halloween into next year. We're going to be here, and I hope you'll join us. This is Larry Thompson, and along with Carolina and the rest of our team, thank you for listening. Remember, it's never too late to start living happily ever after.
KPFT Programmer Profile.
Hi, this is Steve Gallington of the People's News. But what is the People's News? Just as KPFT is people-powered radio, the People's News is people-powered news. What we do is we focus on local news and international news that is of interest to the community, the unspun and the unvarnished truth. We go out and get 5 to 10 minute interviews with local politicians, with local newsmakers, everything that is of interest to our listeners. And we're always looking for that next story, and we're looking for other people on air as well. So if you have a story that might be of interest to us, bring it to us and let us know, and we will put it on the air, either in our voices or in your voice. Because this is your program, the People's News belongs to the people, and we want to hear from you.
Listen for the People's News Sundays at noon, Monday and Thursday at 9 a.m. on KPFT's HD2 channel.
Hi, I'm Steve Hunter with U Talk. That's a special program that gives you a chance to give some input right back into KPFT and to everybody that's listening to it. What you think, what you think's important. It gives us guidance in what we do in our programming and what's important. Weekday mornings from 8 to 9, immediately after Democracy Now. Call in. We throw you on the air. We all talk together. We have a chance to puzzle out what's kind of happening in this world and share it with a lot of other people. That's the purpose. There is no other program quite like it. I'm Steve Hunter. You talk.